Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what mine does.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're back. We've had a couple of evening recordings. We're back to mornings. Mm-hmm.
I did think about bringing up one of my non-alcoholic beers and starting it that way just to throw people off, but, you know, without the visual cues of the morning sunlight, it kind of ruins the whole joke.
It really does. Mm-hmm. It does. There's no sense to it. It's, you know, it's so funny. The last couple, I've had a nice beer next to me. Now I've got coffee and blood pressure pills. That's my morning.
Oh, so old.
Wow. The stress of running this podcast.
Says the man who's taking proton pump inhibitors for stomach acid and cholesterol medication.
I'm on the verge of cholesterol medication. They told me last time that I need to watch the cholesterol. So, of course, I had a lovely fried egg sandwich before I came down here. I'm bad.
Yes.
If you tell me no more cake and cookies, like, I could totally do that for the rest of my life. But please don't take away my eggs and my cheeseburgers.
Your just general meat-aholism that you have?
Yes. Yep. Yes. Intense meat fascination. Mm-hmm. Which...
Ooh, that's the bumper.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm never going to say those words together ever again. What are we talking about? Okay, a couple things happened this week.
Okay.
Let's see.
All right.
Well, thank you to not a new patron, but an upgraded patron, Paul, who's been one of our patrons from the very beginning, from when we started this whole thing.
He's
been
OG Paul.
OG Paul. That's what we should call him, OG Paul. Mm-hmm.
OG Paul.
He just took the leap to hopnologist, so he's on the Discord now. It's so much fun when a new person jumps on the Discord, because the Discord bot creates this welcome. It's a different welcome message each time. It's always something silly, like, hey, the horse is in the barn, or something stupid like that. And everyone jumped on. It was like, Paul, welcome, Paul. Hiya, Paul. So it's always great to have new voices on the Discord.
That's $10 he ever spent.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So now he's got all of his new best friends he never knew he was missing.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So welcome, Paul. Thank you for taking it up a notch with us. And we had fun last, was it Sunday, Saturday? It was Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday.
Yeah, we were the keynote, the kickoff address for the Ohio Hop Growers Guild. Is that am I
yep.
getting that right? The OHGG.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. We got to sit in on their annual meeting and voting and all that. I was tempted to throw my hat in the ring and try to run for something, but I think they've got a plan in place. I didn't want to mess with it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. You could have been a dark horse outside, you know, candidate that's going to shake up the status quo. Is that what you're going to do?
Yep. Of in Ohio. Yeah, from here.
Yeah.
Yeah, gave it a split second thought. Maybe I should jump in, but decided not to. So if any of you are new listeners who first caught a man, I'm on fire this morning. If you first caught a whiff of us last week at the Ohio Hop Growers Guild, welcome aboard.
Yep.
This is welcome to Crazy Town here.
Mm-hmm. Hello to all of our old friends from Ohio that listen to us.
So yes,
thanks for your continued support.
Absolutely.
We hope to be able to be invited back, certainly when we get together in person again.
Yes, yes. That'll add a whole new dimension to things. It will be fun to be back in person. It will. And it was a nice surprise when we got on that call to see Julie there from Sandy Ridge Farms. It's always nice to see Julie and Sandy Ridge. And while we're mentioning Julie, of course, remember, you're going to start looking at plants soon. 5% off if you use Hopnology. And I believe we did establish you have to scream it at them loudly when you call.
Very loudly, yes.
You have to scream.
Preferably through some sort of amplification device.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Say it loud, say it strong. Hopnology.
Like the first thing, as soon as they answer the phone.
Yeah, and then they'll just take the phone away from their ears and go, Julie, it's for you. It's one of them.
It's one of those people.
Yep. Okay, so today's topic came up. It sort of branched off of one of our mailbag questions from that went live a week or so ago. Or
two mailbag.
Ago. Mailbag. Is that the sound we're going to use?
Mailbag.
Really? Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm I might have to veto that during the annual meeting.
Not on board with that.
Not on board with that. No. So one of the questions that came up there had to do with what's different for, I think it might have been about weeding in year one versus later years. And it kind of led to the, what's different in general about year one versus later years? So the way I'm going to position this is, how does the origin story work? What's the superhero origin story for the hop yard? You know, we talk, you think about all those great superhero origins, and there's either a shot fired in an alley or a spider bite or the rocket ship coming to Earth. So how does the hop yard begin?
Man, all of mine start off with like nuclear waste or someone was poisoned or experimented on. So I have radically different superhero origins.
Mm-hmm. And that's perfect because one of my notes here is it a lighthearted origin or a dark and brooding origin? And I think I know where you're going, which is when we're dealing with Mother Nature, it's dark and brooding.
I was going to say, what's different in year one versus, you know, subsequent years? You start off with a bright, shiny, positive attitude about how the future's going to be, and then by year three, you're completely crushed and demoralized.
So this is, if I'm really going to go deep into the comic book lexicon, so this is the 60s Batman TV show starting out, and it turns into The Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, heavens, yeah. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, sounds like a perfect place to bring in Captain Bringdown.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. Captain Bringdown's origin story. Mm-hmm. It's born out of the churning maelstrom of cynicism and spite.
Bitten by a radioactive stink bug. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Ooh, there you go. I like that. I like that. Yep. Or maybe it was some sort of mutant from all that paraquat that was being hosed all over the place. Highly toxic paraquat.
Oh, you know, that would make perfect sense for paraquat to be.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And again, we're not talking about the king from Shrek. This is a...
No, we are not. No. It's a, okay. Yeah. What were we talking about?
how you begin your hop yard. Yes, folks, it's one of those 7 minutes in and we've said nothing of substance.
Mm-hmm. So from like a technical aspect, you're going to do in the field in year one versus other years? Or are we just looking at the overall, I mean, not the business side, but like the physical ops of the farm?
I think it's mostly the field, but there's got to be some physical ops as well in that you have a field. You're going to grow hops. This is the year you're doing it. What do you have to do before I said this to you earlier in the week, before you get t-shirts printed with the hop farm name on them.
Yeah, business cards.
Uh-huh. You know, before all that starts, what needs to happen? You've got this beautiful green lush grass out in front of you.
As you're doodling your logo on your notepad during work meetings.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what do we need to do? And I'm thinking in terms of, you know, the first thing that pops into my mind is you got to test everything. You've got to test your soil. You've got to look at your
that's probably even pre-year one. I mean, that's like the planning phase. You know, when I think year one, I think plants on the ground. Year one. The whole planning aspect is year zero. I mean, that's the shit that you have to have done before you even break ground.
Right.
So what does that look like? And I think, that's all of your soil testing, that's your site assessment, that's your a lot of back office stuff, which is the budget formation and understanding how much money you're going to be into this and what you're willing to lose if it goes south on you. But so all that aside, we want to talk about first year, right?
I'm thinking first year. Let's assume you have a plan. Let's assume your field is – okay, so to your point, let's assume that testing is done and maybe we'll come back another day and do a year zero.
Like trellis is in. I don't have to worry about that shit.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Your first plants are going in, and what's different about that year? Besides the fact that you know absolutely zero, what's different about that year versus what happens when you're in more of a steady state?
Gotcha.
In future years.
Yep. First thing you're probably going to do is – regret that you never got around to putting your irrigation system in.
I love that number one is regret. Is regret in general, but okay, regret about irrigation specifically.
So what happens is you end up in the scenario where you think in that year zero time frame, you you think you've done your homework, but Mother Nature's going to take you to school. Mm-hmm. You know, like we said, no plan survives implementation. So you're going to, you got to be ready to do a whole lot of pivoting in your, so just get that in your head. You're going to start off with what you think is going to be the best, you know, I shouldn't say best, the most reasonable approach, given your hopefully deep, deep thought about your hop yard and your business operations. But it's going to change. So just take that to the bank. It's going to change. So from a, I think, a technical standpoint, you're putting plants or rhizomes in the ground in year one. So what are, how to set yourself up for success and what to expect in year one opposed to subsequent years. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are we back to the regret?
I'm tired just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. And what can you, you know, what can you expect out of your plants in year one and maybe things to look for that, again, what I'm trying to get the bottom of is the novice grower who's never been, you know, we've been talking so much about record keeping and notes and data that, and you use that data to make informed decisions based on the past. And we've spoken so much about legacy growers who are multi-generational, where they know these things because they've lived through these things. We're talking year one, brand new grower. Maybe they've listened to all 105 episodes of Hopnology. Maybe they've read both books that are out there on hop production that are worth their weight in salts. Both of them.
Yeah.
But this is their first year where they're seeing emergence. They're seeing Downy Mildew. They're seeing things are happening. And in order to set that yard up on the right path going forward, what steps need to be taken in that year one that they may not be expecting?
Ah, okay. Does that help? Everything. Yeah, all everything. Of it.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you're... The biggest thing, I just said it, Mother Nature is going to take you to school, so get ready for it. You can do all as much planning and forethought, and you know you can be a spreadsheet farmer as much as you want, but when you get out into in situ in the real world, you're going to get spanked. It's just going to happen. So you have to be ready to pivot. That's the absolute number one mindset that you need to go in with. The other mindset is, and this is all caveat stuff, so I'll get to the technical stuff in a minute, but the other thing is, in year zero, when you're like, oh, you know, you want to get to the plants, you want to get them in the ground because somehow that validates your existence. So resist the urge to put shit off into year one. I can do that later. I see this all the time. Get plants in the ground, then put the trellis in. No, don't do it. Put my plants in, and then I'll get around to getting the irrigation in. No, don't do it. Your plants are the engine of your entire operation. So why would you neglect your engine?
Well, and I think that's what people think is that, well, it's going to take me 3 years to get to a higher level of yield. Let's give them a year. And while they're giving me a nothing yield in year one, I'll build a trellis around them. I'll build irrigation around them. Building around your plants sucks.
Right.
It is so much harder than developing the system the right way in the right order.
Okay, excellent segue into the actual why and how of doing things. That mentality of, well, I'm not going to get any yield in year one, so why bother training them? So why bother this? So why bother that? That's like saying, well, my infant isn't a teenager yet, so why do I bother feeding it and clothing it? It'll somehow grow up and get to where it needs to be, and then I can engage with it. That's the exact same mindset. Excuse me, exact same mindset. Don't do it. In order to have a well-adjusted, contributing young adult is to nurture it and foster it and give it everything that it possibly needs in those formative years. Same thing with your hop plants. Year one is the single most critical year in hop production. That is the one where you need to spend the absolute most time in the hop yard, maintaining and managing those plants. In order to do that, they already have to have everything that they need infrastructure-wise to thrive. Otherwise, you're not going to get to that mature yield in year three or four or five. And I see it all the time where we have growers that come back and per our episode on scientific method, we're talking about my yield sucks and it's because my day length. know. As you start digging into it, you find out they put their plants in, really didn't take care of them for 3 years, and now they're at year five and wondering why their yield sucks. Mm-hmm. Because their plants are at year five, and they should be at mature yield. Well, you neglected them for 2 years.
It's following along on your earlier analogy, where I'll be calling social services, by the way. when you don't teach any discipline in the early years, you end up with a brat. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what ends up happening with your plants as well.
Yeah, they're underproductive, they're underwhelming, they're weak, what are you doing? And why would you manage your investment like that? That's dumb. Mm-hmm. So the growers that I find like that are usually the ones that are in it for the notoriety, and they want to be hop growers and they want to be part of the beer business, but ultimately they don't really give two shits about their production.
Well, and I think part of it, though, I want it's easy to associate taking shortcuts with laziness and lack of an eye toward quality, but sometimes it's just you're trying to do things faster. And I'm not defending it. I want to explain why it's a bad idea. You want to do things faster, and you look at the time frame for hop production, getting hops into the ground and then up on the vine to the point where you've got enough to sell. You need to be willing to put in the years to get it mm-hmm. there. So throwing the plants in now to give yourself a head start, and you'll catch up with them once they're ready for you. I wouldn't jump to that's someone who's lazy and is doing it wrong. It's someone who's not thinking through it clearly, certainly.
That's correct. You're absolutely correct. However, the mentality...
You don't like that general mentality of doing a way of doing things.
The mentality of I'll put them in and get around to this stuff later because, well, why? What is later? What is happening right now that's more important than establishing your yard? I'm building the business. Well, what are you doing? You going to beer festivals and hanging out in tap rooms and living it up? What are you doing? This is from my observations, right? In my region, that's what I see all the time. Mm-hmm. Then you go to their yard or you ask them, well, yeah, how was your yield this year? And they won't tell you anything because it sucks. You go to their yard, you got weeds up to your eyeballs. You've got spindly plants and the yield's bad. Well, why? Now, that's granted an extreme example, but to your point, the growers that are trying to do too much in year one because maybe, well, you don't know what you don't know. And so now you're saying, I've only got so much time, so much resource, I got to get all this stuff done. First thing, Captain Bringdown, sarcastic asshole that he is, says most of that stuff could have been averted had you spent the time to plan correctly in the first place.
Sure.
Now, right?
Of course.
Proper planning prevents piss poor performance.
That's what I'm talking about. That's a new mm-hmm. one. I like mm-hmm. that.
So let's go on with that. Now, I want to focus on, at 20 minutes into this, I want to focus on the steps, why we do things when we do them. What is the reasoning behind it? Why they're so important?
Sure.
In year one versus subsequent years. You're never going to hit those legendary industry yield numbers or even get close unless you put the investment in during the non-yielding years. You're just not going to get it. Mm-hmm. And there's the reason that, let's call them pro growers, people that have been in the industry a while, understand the techniques required on their hop yards. The reason we can get to mature yields like, you know, 1,600 pounds per acre in 2 years is several fold. But I think primarily it's our first year care because we are putting all kinds of energy and effort around getting those plants established and healthy and getting as much root growth as we possibly can in order to get a healthy crown established so that following year into year two, she's ready and raring to go. How do we do that? How do we get ourselves in the best possible location to take establishment off the table as a variable for poor yield? Mm-hmm. That's really, I think, the crux of it, right?
Yeah. Building a foundation.
Right. That's exactly what you're doing. I would say first thing, obviously, plants. Healthy plants, good plants, plants that are coming from a trusted source, like our friends at Sandy Ridge Farms, or you're, you know, you're cutting your own rhizomes and you're planting them out. So the first thing that we look at there is timing. When are you getting these plants in the ground? You can't expect to put a plug, a live plant in the ground in, let's say, well, my region, right, South Central Wisconsin, in July, and expect to get strong establishment such that you're going to knock it out of the park with yield in year two. Ain't going to happen. You got to get that plant in the ground when it's early enough yet in the season that it can go through its vigorous growth cycle and get established. So for me, that means in many cases, you know, when we were planting rhizomes, it would be as soon as the ground is thawed enough, I can get a spade in it, which some years maybe wasn't until end of March, beginning of April. But then also, I'm not putting live plants out that early. So there's that trade-off. But getting the plant in the ground at the right time. Don't say, hey, I got my plants in. Year one's done. Well, no, it's like year 0.5 if you put them in July, because you're just not going to see it. Plus, certainly trying to establish plants in that generally higher heat time frame is never a good idea.
Sure. And to clarify on that one, because you mentioned something interesting before about, we talked about setting, you know, setting a poor baseline and then 3 years later, you don't have much to show for it. Putting the plants in late isn't necessarily going to give you a bad foundation. You're just losing a year by waiting 6 months to do it.
You're losing a year. You're also exposing those plants to stresses and pathogens and disease and things like that when they're not strong enough to potentially survive it.
So you really are suboptimizing your foundation at that point.
You absolutely are. Okay. Drought stress and heat stress and all that kind of stuff. It's like, why would you do that? You usually do that because, well, I couldn't get my plants in time. I ran out. I didn't have my trellis up. I didn't X, Y, and Z. Again, can I go back to year zero planting? There's probably several people listening right now or face palming, be like, oh my God, he's talking to me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna be a Kevin again here and say, you know, you're talking about planting in March, potentially, at least for our region.
Rhizomes.
But we know, well, and maybe I'm thinking plants instead of rhizomes. When it comes to plants, you usually don't get deliveries of plants until the May-June timeframe.
Correct.
So you need to – you're not calling anyone in February going, hey, can I get some rhizomes for March?
No. But even – with live plants, you're dealing with two completely different, really, animals, physiological animals, in the plant world.
You're the same as Mr. Science. You're in the wrong genus.
Yeah. I know. So, what genus?
I don't know.
What are you, Mr. Science? You could call me Mr. Science. Oh, come on. Okay.
Just try to throw it right back at you.
Yeah, well, you tripped over your own feet.
Phylum? Phylum? Is that a thing?
Kingdom?
Oh. Well, the animal kingdom
versus the plant kingdom?
I guess that's a thing.
Linnaeus right now is having a fit, rolling over in his grave. What were we talking about?
The person who invented the soybean, I believe, is where we were going.
Who invented the soybean, right. Wasn't that George Washington Carver?
Pretty sure it was.
He invented the soybean. He sure did. Whoa, squirrel.
Do we need to start at the beginning again?
We're way off track. Honestly, I don't even remember what we were talking about.
I was talking about the fact that you, in order to even have rhizomes to plant.
We're talking about planting, yeah.
That again goes back to the year 0.5 or you know.
Yeah.
The planning side of it.
I'm back on the trolley. So.
Ding, ding.
Ding, ding. The plants already have an established crown. They already have a differentiation of root systems. They're also forming tubers and runners that are going to be rhizomes. In some cases, some of them may already have rhizomes on them. So you're already that much further ahead of the system, whereas a rhizome has no real differentiation yet. So it's got to go through that entire phase. So it needs that extra time. Therefore, we put it in earlier in the ground. At the end of the, you know, if you're doing everything right, quote unquote, by year three, is there any difference in yield or vigor? No, not really. But it's just two different ways to approach things. Get those plants in at the right time for whatever form factor you're using. is important. Mm-hmm. The next thing that's important is giving that plant everything that it needs from food and water standpoint. You should never, ever, ever be putting your plants in before your irrigation is functional. Ever. Does it happen? All the freaking time. Uh-huh. It just does, because you're like, oh, I'll get around to that. I got to get these plants in the ground.
I get enough rain.
Yeah, they get enough rain. Probably not.
I got a hose.
The number of growers I see that, you know, when their plants show up, they don't have the irrigation system, and they put their plants in, and they're like, oh my God, I got to water these things, but I don't have an irrigation system. And yeah, they're out there with buckets or a nurse tank getting those plants watered in and to make sure they have water. Bad news, Jose. You don't want to be doing that. Make sure you got everything to that plant that it needs to thrive. End of story. I don't know how much clearer to make that.
You know, your child analogy earlier is well taken here. You know, you don't bring the baby home from the hospital with no crib and no food and no clothes and no you
leave it in the closet.
Yeah, yeah. And granted, you can scramble out and get that stuff late, but ooh, it's no.
You're do people do it all the time?
Oh God, yes.
Can they be successful? Eventually, yes. Are they? But they're setting themselves back. Mm-hmm. And those are the actions. What seemingly simple actions that affect whether you've got a mature plant that's reaching optimum yield in year 3 or 4 or 5, whatever it's going to be. I would say the next thing is competition. And we talked about that in the mailbag episode, where the question was about weeds and how important is it and how do you manage weed pressure in year 1 versus all the other years. Again, regardless of what your companion planting protocol looks like, whether you're going to use companion plants for biodiversity, for, you know, beneficial insects, for nutrient, you know, management, for weed, you know, suppression. That's great going into future years. But in year 1, you don't want anything competing with those hops. Nothing. So as much and as clean as you can get that hop yard, the better off you're going to be. Now, granted, could you have planted inter-rows, like driveway rows? Could you put stuff in there? Yeah, probably. I mean, certainly if it's like an annual grass or something like that, where it doesn't really form. It's not going to form a long-lasting competing root system. And then keep your mounds open? Yes, absolutely. But you're really looking at making sure those plants have nothing to compete with as they're establishing and expanding their root zone. Certainly, at the very least, in the mound. I would encourage people to keep their companion plantings low, low, low at that point. That means a lot of weeding. A lot of weeding. And that could be pre-emergence, that could be post-emergence, usually both. I don't know what else to say about that. You're trying to give the plant everything that it needs to succeed. Part of that is making sure there's no competition.
Yep. Which is interesting because you're right. I mean, we've talked so much about weeding and how there are so many things you can do to deal with that and make it easier on yourself. And it sucks to have to do all this weeding. But you're right. That's one thing that... if you do it too early, you're hurting your establishment.
I would say for people, if you're looking at money to spend in the hop yard, like in terms of your operation, spend it on manual weeding on small scale, you know, a few acres. Get some high school kids in there, get the marching band in who needs new uniforms or whatever the hell it is, and keep the weed pressure low. But it's not a one-and-done thing. It's a constant thing. It's like painting a bridge, right? As soon as you're done, you start over again. And it never ends. That's why those of us who've gone through a few of those seasons are like, pre-emergence herbicides are miracles. Mm-hmm. Holy hell. And some pre-emergence can be used in new plantings. And we used it extensively. It just depends on your scenario. So keep those weed seeds from germinating in the first place. And to keep that weed pressure low.
It's like a lactate pill for your hop yard.
Ooh, nice. There you go. Lactate pill for your hop yard. Preventative. Yeah. Preventative. As opposed to, you know, needing to go through and do a bunch of burn down applications when you have to try and shield new plants and all that kind of stuff from getting zapped. Don't want to do that. Pre-emergence can also work. So weed control, absolutely critical in year 1.
I feel like this is the old man pharmacy episode of Hopnology.
we have to start giving those ridiculous disclaimers. It's like listening to Hopnology may cause riotous vomiting and explosive diarrhea.
I think we might. You can also join Patreon and use your Payflex card from your health healthcare plan to pay for it.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. All right. So that was that was weeding. So that was dealing with weeding and pre-emergence. Yeah.
Think about your fertilizer schedule. You know, people say, "Oh, I got to put 180 pounds of nitrogen on my hop yard." I'm like, "Well, maybe, but not until it's mature." Immature plants, that's way too much. So what are you going to do? Make sure you're adjusting your fertilizer program appropriately. You don't want to put too much on because you're going to risk burning all these young root hairs and potential burning top foliage, depending on how you're applying your fertilizer. But you want to dial that back. And you also may want to alter your nutrient recipe to foster root development and that kind of growth over, let's say, a lot of nitrogen for vegetative, you know, explosive growth. That's really not what we're after.
Right, right. So it's interesting. I mean, you use the word alter, and that's assuming they already had a plan. Again, the plan at the beginning. So this is your first year. So you've got a plan for nutrient management program that involves root growth and different things necessarily than you would plan for in year three.
Correct. That's part of the plan. That's part of the year zero plan. If you don't have one of those, you're already behind the eight ball.
Mm-hmm. You're in year negative two.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations. See all that money you just spent? Flush.
There's Captain Bring Down. I knew he'd show up. Yeah, ahoy, Captain.
He's always late to the party. let's see. What else can we talk about? So nutrients, weed management, disease management. Mm-hmm. Just because they're young plants and you've obtain them from a reputable source does not mean that they're not going to get diseased being out in the field. They will, I guarantee it. So what is your plan? And how are you treating those plants? Because you can't wait for something to happen. If you know you're in a downy mildew area, you can't wait until you see downy mildew. You need to start now. And that starts with preventative applications, keeping those plants as healthy as possible. You don't want to have them get infected even in year one where you know it's now just going to be a continual decline in yield even before they've reached optimal yield.
And so much of that in year one, I swear I'm pulling things out of everywhere today, is a bit of that G.I. Joe, the more you know. You know, knowing is half the battle. If you've never seen downy before, you're so much more likely to be surprised by it. You need to be aware of what to look for. And I can't tell you how many times over the course of time with Hopnology as well as back with Gorse Valley where we'd get comments from growers, my yard was fine, and then I went away for a three-day weekend, and I came back, and it looks like, you know, mm-hmm. looks like there's a fine powder everywhere. Well, okay, well, yes, bad. I think it surprises every grower the first time that mildew hits because it happens so quickly mm-hmm. and so I'm going to say unexpectedly, and you're going to go, nope, you should always expect it.
Yes, on both accounts. Yep. What do you want me to say about that?
Well, I just want to point it out that, you know, in year one, that cannot happen faster. It will happen faster than you think it will.
It's like one of those E biographies, you know, behind the music.
I never thought it would happen to me.
What? Why? There's entire tracts of educational seminars in conferences related to downy mildew management, and you didn't think it was going to happen to you? Okay.
Know what to look for, I guess, is my point, that mm-hmm. it will happen. It doesn't only happen to a big yard. Well, if I don't have dense, flush, you know, foliage at the base where it's going to trap the moisture in, it's not going to be a problem for me. My density is non-existent. No, you're still going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's going to happen. Obviously, the few of you that are in regions that don't have downy mildew, hop downy mildew, congratulations. Mm-hmm. Yet. Mother Nature finds a way. That's all I'm going to say.
I swear, you're going to be the one to bring... You're going to just to get those people to stop talking, you're going to be the one they catch, like, bringing it down there.
We call it our spore sock, where we hide some spores up in our sock, and we walk through their yard and just jangle our pant leg a little bit, spread the spores around.
You flowed into that plan way easier than I thought. for something that would have just come into your brain.
Well, it comes from the cranberry industry. It's an old cranberry growers joke. Anyway.
Okay. Watch out for James and his jangly leg, everyone.
Yeah, jangly legs. Altwise can come in here, but he's got to take his socks off first. Yeah, wouldn't be the first time. Anyway, think about your first year hop yard as a nursery full of babies. That's what it is. And you are on constant vigil alert to make sure that you're keeping the wolves at bay, right? You've got a bunch of young lambs in there, and the last thing you want is, you know, a fox or a wolf or something like that in the pen to wreak havoc. So you need to stay vigilant. And that may mean expenditure of cash for labor to stay on top of this stuff, especially if you're very small. You don't likely have the equipment in place to handle this kind of stuff.
It's going to cost money to start up a hop yard?
It is. It's not just about how much the trellis and plants cost. It's about what are your operating costs, because those are what will eat you alive. Hey, let's use that as a brief segue into making sure you have all the right equipment.
Ooh, yes. Garden weasel, shovel, and Leatherman.
Leatherman?
Yep.
And like I said, I think in our text, a 1997 Toyota Camry?
Correct.
As your tractor? Yeah. Yeah. Wrong. Be realistic about your equipment needs based on the scale of your farm. Does a half-acre grower need to have a tractor? Probably not. We've talked about this in past episodes. But you don't want to be in a position where you're like, okay, I've got 2 acres. How am I going to spray these things? Because I know I have to have a spray program. Now I got to figure out how to do it. And first thing you do is you go out and get a little hand pump sprayer. And I laugh at you because you're never going to get finished. Where's your air blast sprayer? Well, I didn't think I'd need one. Why? Why? Was it you didn't think you'd need one, or you didn't want to spend the money on it because you know they're expensive? Two different things. Make sure you have the right equipment in-house so that you can apply these methodologies appropriately, whether that's a sprayer or whether that's the right soil tilling mechanism, whether it's a rototiller or a weed badger or whatever you're going to do, or it's manual. I don't care. One way or the other, you're spending money to get this done. And your time is money as well. Let's not forget that. So not having the right equipment can absolutely crush you, because you will find yourself in a position of not physically being able to keep up. There's a reason why mechanized agriculture allowed us to expand to the first world nation that most of us live in today, because it got us away from the ox and the plow and being limited by how much we could till, given the energy that went into that ox and our time. So that's a critical aspect of efficient agriculture, is mechanization. Do not neglect it. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do all these things that we're saying you need to do and be able to win the game of hops.
I think we said we deal with operations and all that later, but I think something that straddles the line between that and field is, do you have bodies in place?
Yeah. Well, it's the labor part, especially in weeding. That's where you're going to need your bodies, is in weeding. You know, the other question is, you know, well, what about for harvest, and do I harvest them or not? Well, that's up to you. If you get a crop and you want to harvest it to help drive your business in the brewing space, to get your name out there, to show you have a crop, go for it. Whatever. Mm-hmm. I'd leave them hang to continue to build resources in the rhizome, in the crown, for the following year. Where possible, obviously, if you've got several acres, that's probably not possible. So then I would question, how are you going to get those hops off? And is it going to be worth your time? Or would it just be better to save that money on whatever labor you're going to need to get those hops down and invest it in your harvester for next year when you actually have a bigger crop? Yeah. Those kind of decisions.
And if you do harvest in year one, just don't be shocked when no one will pelletize 50 pounds for you.
There's that, and don't be shocked when your chemistry's all over the place and you've got Columbus that's supposed to be at 12.5 alpha and it comes in at 6.
Which actually leads to the point that if you can harvest, if you don't have a better opportunity cost for that time and that money, if you don't have a better use for that, then harvesting just so you can test the crop and measure and start your data collection is not the worst idea.
It is not, and it's also a great idea to harvest to at the very least, test out your drying methods. Because you don't want to wait until you've got a massive amount of hops to dry and then screw it all up.
And, you know, testing your drying methods is that's a great point. I recall when we were testing different dryers and we talked about, well, what could we dry instead of hops as a test? And the only thing we could think of were flours that were more expensive than hops to buy and run through the dryer. There's no good proxy.
Right. And you need to get that experience under your belt with your dryer. This is totally going off topic, but I was chatting with somebody the other day online about, you know, how they were like, well, you know, I'm getting inconsistencies in my drying and why. And we dug into their system a little bit and we discovered the reason. But one person chimed up, said, well, you don't need to do all that testing. You just feel it. And if you do this, you do that, you know, that's at 8%. And we got kind of into a row about it because, no, you can't do that. Well, professional kiln dryers, kilnsters do it all the time. No. That's why they spend $30,000 on radio frequency moisture meters. So they're using that, and then they're feeling how close they are as to whether or not they need to get in there and use that machine. So I'll go on that tirade later. But if you can get some of your crop off in year one, practice with it, dry it, because you may not, you know, most likely not going to be at full yield in year two. But you want to make sure you're going to maximize your good crop through not screwing up the drying process.
Yep.
So take whatever you can get and practice, even if it's on a very small scale, just to learn how this works, what the characteristics are.
I think that's everything.
Yeah, you don't need to know anything else.
Today's episode brought to you by Babies, Old Man Medication, and Jaggly Legs. Welcome to Crazy Town here.